Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yo. Look. Yo. Look. Aubrey Edwards, Tony Schiavone, we bout to party, we bout to party. Unrestricted, got the house now. We gon' turn it up, up, bring the house down. Got that bass, bass pumping, make them bounce now. Flossing like they bossing, and the freaks are coming out now.
This is AEW Unrestricted, the official podcast of All Elite Wrestling. Aubrey Edwards and Tony Schiavone here with you. In your earbuds or headphones, whatever it is you use to consume audio. Hey, Tony, how you doing?
Hey, Aubrey. Whatever you use to consume audio.
Yeah, I mean, some people listen to it on speakers. Some people just...
You're the best.
Some people wait until they're in a car. I don't know. I'm just letting you know how people listen to things and how ears work.
Some people recite it back. They listen to it and they say it back and you hear it from the next person and you whisper down the lane.
There you go. There you go. Some people call that telephone. Anyway,
the wonderful
sultry voice you just heard was Mr. Bryce Remsburg, my personal favorite referee.
Really?
Not just at AEW, but oh yeah, 100%.
Tony, what a day for you! Both two of your favorite referees in the same place. Tony, what do you know about that?
Hey,
he's looking around. He's looking for Tommy Young. He's looking for Nick Patrick
and Mike Posey. I'm looking.
Yeah,
for
Mike Posey.
Mike Posey. Anyway, we're here with Bryce Remsburg.
Every time Tony calls me, Aubrey, he says, oh, if it isn't my second favorite referee. And I say, you better not let Aubrey hear you say that, because who knows who number one is? I don't know. We never found out.
I don't know, man. I would put Tommy Young there as if I were to guess Tony's favorite referee. I don't know. Anyway, speaking of referees, you know, Bryce Remsburg here, wonderful, wonderful referee extraordinaire, storied indie career, lots of fun stuff to talk about today. I'm going to kick off with probably my favorite Bryce Remsburg match I have ever seen, which is Invisible Man versus Invisible Stan, which, Tony, I don't know if you've ever seen this match.
I have not.
Okay, setting the scene a little bit, Joey Janela's Spring Break, WrestleMania weekend, and there's backstory, there's a guy named Invisible Man, he's facing Invisible Stan, and it's literally a wrestling match with two invisible wrestlers. And when it was announced, there's like a match graphic with literally like the logo of the event and nobody else on it. And the first thought I had was the only person who can pull this off is Bryce Remsburg.
Yeah. They definitely announced the match before they asked me if I wanted to do it. So it's a good thing I said yes.
Yes.
But there is a, I guess I was uniquely qualified or something, but a lot of very nice things to say about this, including Mark Henry, who told me his son watched it this past week, which I was,
whoa.
And I was like, did you watch it, Mark? And he's like, no. I was like, yeah, maybe not. Maybe that's for the best. But it was a unique moment in time in which a lot of people have a lot of nice things to say about that. But in the truest sense, the real stars of that were the audience that Joey Janela and GCW cultivated. Because had they not been involved in, you know, intrigued and excited about this, it would have been a long 8 minutes for Bryce or 10 minutes or whatever it was. But I was given this weird shaped ball to referee a match between two invisible people. I kind of like created, I guess, what would be like a stand-up comedy set list. We'll do this, then we'll do this. And if this is going well, maybe it'll take a little longer. If this isn't going well, maybe we'll skip to this thing. And I ran it by two people who I trust, who now both work for AEW as well. One was Orange Cassidy, who just nodded and thumbs up. And one was All Ego Ethan Page, who are kind of comedic wrestling brains that I trusted that were in the building. And they maybe tinkered a little thing here or there, but more or less I just went out there and it was a blur, and then it was over. And I didn't think much of it and opened my phone, and it was, you know, the craziest response I'd ever gotten. I was actually already booked for Double or Nothing in Las Vegas when that happened, but I like to tell people that match got me booked because one of the Young Bucks tweeted about it. It was like, oh, you know, you should bring that to AEW. And I was like, and many fans thought that was me getting booked for the first time. Like, that was my, I got hooked up with AEW because of the Invisible Man match. And then maybe the second or third time I met Tony Khan, he complimented me on it, which kind of blew my mind that he has time to watch that kind of nonsense on YouTube. But it is free on YouTube if you, you know, have 10 minutes you want to waste away.
It's not waste at all. The shadow water sequence, table spot, ref distraction. It's got greatest hits. I absolutely love it.
Thank you, Aubrey.
I'm going to have to watch it. I'm very intrigued now. I'm going to have to watch it.
See? You were there, right, Aubrey? Like in person.
I was.
You were in New Jersey, at least.
I was in New Jersey and New York that weekend. The whole weekend's a blur. I'm sure it was for you.
I think that's the first time I met you, or maybe in New Orleans the year before.
New Orleans the year before. I think we both worked Beyond Wrestling. That's but right. Yeah, that was definitely a, like, hey, we're going to have to change the order of the refs because Bryce needs to run to New York because the Athletic Commission needs specific paperwork.
And, that's true. I did 10 shows in one weekend. That was my personal best. I did 10 shows in 3 days in New Jersey, New York. It was pretty crazy between Ubers and subways and my car. And yeah, it was nuts. And that was kind of the last go hard on the Indies weekend I ever did. But that New Orleans weekend too, that Beyond show that you're talking about, there's a match with Tony Storm and Tim Thatcher that was like 2:30 in the morning, and it has like 30 million views on YouTube or something. Like, it's, I don't know why or how, but the internet's a weird place, as we can all agree.
Bryce is, before we get into your journey about AEW, Bryce is a big baseball fan.
That's true.
Well, kind of. He's a Phillies fan. But Bryce.
Tony.
Yes, go ahead.
Let's humble brag about Tony for a minute. I was on very recently on the Pittsburgh Pirates field with one Tony Schiavone, and he was approached by the manager of the Cardinals.
Right.
And we were walking by the Pirates dugout, and someone goes, Schiavone! And he goes over and talks to the guy, and the guy's so excited to see Tony. And we're walking away, and I say to Tony, I was like, who was that? He goes, I don't know. We came to learn that this was a minor leaguer in the Braves system who was also named Bryce. Right,
Bryce Wilson, who was he was a reliever for the Gwinnett Braves when I did the games, and he's with the Pirates now. He came out, said hello to me, and we were all on the field that day. Britt Baker threw out the first pitch. I was the catcher. It was a great moment for Britt, and it was a great moment for AEW because we were kind of all elevated as kind of big stars that day. It was quite a day, wasn't it?
It was quite a day. We got to sit in the suite. I had never been I might have like paid to take a tour, but I'd never been a guest on a major league field before.
Right.
It was very, very cool. And it was big for Britt, and it was big for AEW. It got a lot of good traction and attention in a city where we all were in advance of the first Rampage. In Britsburg. It was a good day. We got to sit in a suite with a Culture City family,
right,
and learn about them a lot and their purpose and their mission. And it was a really, really great day. Sometimes as a family man, Tony, a day off in a city is kind of like, oh man, I'd rather be home. But that day, that was a day off well spent in Pittsburgh.
Yes, it was. And you and I, before we go to the next question, which will be Aubrey's, you and Excalibur drank a six pack of beer and a whole bottle of vodka that day, which I thought was
great. That's not true. That is not true. That is not true. I had stuff to do later in the day. No, no, no. With really dragging Excalibur through the mud here. No, it was a 12 pack and two bottles.
Oh, got it. I forgot Excalibur was part of this, so it's got to be a lot of booze.
Ricky Starks was dealing. Ricky Starks for the bill for that one, if truth be told.
Yeah, we had a great time. We really had a great time.
I'm going to blame the pirate parrot on that one. That was his bad call.
Yes. Yeah, it was his. It was his.
So you had mentioned that Invisible Man, kayfabe, was the reason you came to AEW. But I want to talk about your journey to AEW, like the shoot version. When did you hear about AEW and when were you approached?
When the Young Bucks, the first promotion ever to fly the Young Bucks to a wrestling show was called Chikara, which is a long-running Northeast-based in Philadelphia promotion that I was with from day one. And when the Young Bucks would come to Philadelphia or New York or wherever, I was the one that picked them up at the airport because I did all the travel. I did a lot of the travel for Chikara. This is 2008, 2009. I would pick these young, kind Southern California Christian boys up at the airport. I would take them to Wawa. They would be fascinated by the touch screens, and I would take them to their hotel, and we just kind of developed that relationship that way. And we always had a very, you know, not best friends, but a very friendly relationship. And we kind of kept in touch over, you know, the internet over the years. And when All In got announced, which was kind of the precursor to AEW, I was like, oh, you know, I don't have a lot going on. I'm pretty much over my pharmaceutical advertising job. I'm going to shoot my shot. And I reached out to the Bucks and they said, this All In is a Ring of Honor production. So we're going to use Ring of Honor referees, but just stay put and trust us. I said, okay, I will stay put and I will trust you. And then on Christmas Eve, 2018, which is 7 days before all before AEW was announced on New Year's Day, they just said, we can't tell you more now, but save this date. And the date was May 25th, 2019, which I'll never forget. It was the first Double or Nothing in Las Vegas. And then on New Year's Day, AEW was announced, Double or Nothing was announced. And I think you have a similar story, Aubrey, was originally hired as a freelancer. We were on per-show agreements. First was Double or Nothing 2019 and All Out 2019. And then we got added to
Fighter Fest.
Daytona Beach. Yep. Fighter Fest and Fight for the Fallen in Daytona Beach in Jacksonville. But before we even got to All Out, our per show agreements were enveloped into full on contracts.
Converted into full on contracts. Yep. Yes.
August 1, 2019. Is that your hire?
Mine was September 1st, which is funny enough, the day after the title match with Hangman and Chris. I'm like, oh, I'm not even a full time employee.
You could have held them up for more money.
I could have. Like, you're putting me on the stage, man. Like, why didn't I ask for more money?
Excalibur and I got hired the same day, August 1, 2019. And, you know, we kind of we exchange fun texts every August 1st about, you know, happy hireversary. And then it's been ever since. And I have since re-upped for another couple of years. And then the travel portion of the job became part of the package. And I am, you know, pretty much eat, breathe, and sleep All Elite nowadays. But that is the real story. That the Young Bucks got my foot in the door. I don't think I'd ever met Cody Rhodes or Kenny Omega before Double or Nothing. I may have met Kenny on a show somewhere, but I don't think I'd ever worked with him. I had never met Tony, obviously, until we got to Vegas. And then I remember leaving Vegas, and we were done early because it was, you know, like 7 o'clock. It's like, oh, we're all going to go to this party at this place. It's like, okay. And we waited in line, but, you know, Tony had rented out an entire lounge at the MGM Grand. And I, you know, this was not an everyday occurrence in my life in those days. And it was just like a very strange, we just, you know, we have to wear collared shirts and go to this place and it's open bar and all you can eat. And just like, you know, wow, this is how it goes now. And never looked back since.
Bryce Remsburg, we're talking with Bryce, one of our great referees. And Bryce, you kind of glossed over the travel thing came into play. Now we need to really qualify this. Everybody travels. I get it. When people listening to this podcast hear you say the travel thing came into play, they're going to think, oh, well, you got on an airplane and you travel just like all of us, which you do. But the travel thing for you is more than that because you're a travel guy. Which to me, two things there. It has to be many times a nightmare, and I know you're too nice of a guy to really say that. And working with Chris Harrington has to be a freaking nightmare as well.
Oh, boy. Okay. Real wild card. So, but verbally abusive, physically abusive.
but you, I guess, you and Paul Turner work on the, are the two guys that work on the travel for everybody.
Yeah, I started as an assistant, and then I kind of took over the department in December of 2019, right, which was not a planned part of this job. I would just kind of fell into it. Right. And since then, I have taken on more responsibility and more people. And I'd say when AEW started Double or Nothing, between talent and crew, you're probably flying or putting up in hotels maybe 70 or 80 people. And then when Dynamite started, it kind of became 90, 95, 100. But nowadays, we are in the between staff and talent, we are in the range of 130, 140, 150 every week. And while I don't personally book all of them, I do oversee all 140 of those. So that's, you know, before we started this podcast, I was adjusting hotel lists for our next adventure. And it is strange because, Aubrey, you probably feel this way sometimes too. The talent portion of your job might accommodate for a bigger dollar figure, but the office portion of your job...
Time and stress, significantly more.
And I'm happy to have both, and I am very appreciative of the full package because it allows me, you know, benefits as an office employee and all that good stuff. And paternity leave when my son was born was because of my office job. But time-wise, we are more in like a 90-10 situation on the travel versus the refereeing side. But I have said this in seminars before. The more hats you wear, the harder it is to get rid of you.
Boom. Job security, brother.
That's right. That's right. I can't speak for Hawaiian shirts, though, Tony.
You should.
We're talking to Bryce Remsburg, referee, travel agent, all-around amazing human being. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about his background and how he got into this crazy business.
It's AEW Unrestricted, Tony and Aubrey talking to our good buddy Bryce Remsburg, all-around great travel guy, and obviously one of the best referees. Bryce and I started this thing. I guess maybe I started it because I didn't really, in the 18 years that I was away from wrestling, didn't really follow wrestling. Obviously, I didn't follow indie wrestling, but I'd always heard that there's this referee, he's a great fucking referee, his name's Bryce fucking Remsburg.
Yep.
And so I would see Bryce, I said, remember who the fuck you are. You're the best referee ever in the Indies. You're Bryce fucking Remsburg.
That would cheer me up on stressful days. I will be honest.
Well, good.
I would just pass you in the hallway and say that to you. You're like, you know what? You're right, Tony Schmidt.
It's great. So let's talk about how you started refereeing. You trained, right? Went to a wrestling training school with Mike Quackenbush and Reckless Youth, right?
Oh, that's true. Look at you, Tony, doing your homework. In 1991, I became a wrestling fan. I was 7 or 8 years old. It was the Ultimate Warrior, the Macho Man, larger than life, you know, the colors, I couldn't turn away.
Right.
And then I discovered independent wrestling when I was maybe 14 or 15. Then I could drive to shows and I realized that, like, you know, WWE and WCW, Tony, and NWA or whatever it is, those are like, that's you too. That's the Foo Fighters. These are these giant concerts. But you can go see this cool indie band or a cool indie show in a VFW hall, and it's $10 to get in, and there's no guardrails, and you can touch the bottom rope and get in the ring at intermission and hold the belts. And like, that was very attractive to me. So as I, by happenstance, the two guys I like to follow on the indies most, Reckless Youth and Mike Quackenbush, opened up a wrestling school called the Chikara Wrestle Factory in Allentown, Pennsylvania, home of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, Tony. I know you know
right.
that. In 2002, I was a freshman in college. I was not excited about college. So two nights a week, I drove up there to learn how to referee. I don't know if you can tell by my 5'5", 150-pound frame, but I am not an imposing physical specimen. I am not an athlete. I was the guy that played Little League and hoped the ball wouldn't get hit to him. So I wouldn't embarrass my dad in front of his friends. So the idea of being an athletic supporter and not an athlete was very attractive to me. And the thought of being a referee, which is you get to travel to all the towns, you get to, you know, attend all the events. You don't have to pay for a ticket anymore. You get to be in the ring and sort of part of the show. Like, that was very attractive to me. And it was half price to train as a referee than it was as a wrestler. And I was a very poor college. I was a very poor college kid. So sign me up. And I learned how to wrestle when I trained. Like, I learned how to take bumps and I learned about, you know, the positioning in the ring and all that stuff. And I did a couple of practice matches. So I have that information way back in me, but I'm also fragile and small, and I very much like the referee role. I, you know, get physical when it's necessary, but not every day. And I also like the concept. Obviously, things have changed now, but a wrestler's shelf life when I started training in 2002 was 38, 40, 42, you're done. You know, that was the ECW years did a lot for that, I imagine. But it's different now, but I am confident I could be a worthwhile active referee for at least another, I don't know, 6 months, a year.
No, oh, I love it.
Far into my 40s, hopefully.
Hopefully. Please, I hope so. I look up to Bryce every day. I'm just like, oh, man,
really?
This guy's great. He gets to work with Shaquille O'Neal. He gets to work all these crazy matches. Actually, how did the whole Shaq thing happen? Because I know that, like, you were flying down to Atlanta to do some, like, positioning and whatnot.
The way that happened was my height. And there's a visually jarring visual of a 5'5 referee next to a 7'1 professional wrestler. And I think that is sometimes why I get assigned some matches, but definitely the 7'1 Shaq against the 5'5 me was, you know, and I went down and, you know, walked through a couple things with Shaq and make sure everybody's comfortable. Everybody knows where we're going to be. Everybody knows how it's going to go. And it went, and it was a success. And, you know, he didn't seem to hate it and seemed to have a good time and thanked me after. And, you know, It was crazy. That's like a thing that, and you probably understand this, Aubrey, you have high school friends, remember, that don't really care about wrestling. But when something like that happens, they're like, oh, dude, that's cool. And I was like, yeah, it is cool. Like, I can do cool things every week, but this is the thing that you know about. So, yes, as a viewer of Kazam and an Orlando Magic fan as a 10-year-old kid, that was a very, very, very cool thing. And Shaq was super, super cool. He was down for whatever. He went through a freaking table. So, he was obviously in it to win it and a part of the game here. And I would not be surprised if somehow, some way, he resurfaces in the wrestling world somehow, some way.
Were you there with us when we put him in the ambulance?
I didn't walk to the ambulance. Actually, I did, because there was probably some earpiece time cue business, but you would have been on top of that as well. But it was crazy. He just vanished. The big man just disappeared. Yep. I don't know how that happens. That was probably the Kazam. There's probably some genie in him there. There must have been a magic lamp and the ambulance. I don't know. I wasn't in there, but yeah.
It was a pants on fire moment. Is what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, hair on fire moment is what it was for me. So,
yeah, not for me or Shaq.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Hey, so you've had a lot of people you're very close to in wrestling. I mentioned Excalibur, obviously, and you've been very close to Orange Cassidy because you guys go way back. What do you think about his success in AEW?
I would have never predicted it. Orange Cassidy is kind of the offbeat Chikara Invisible Man flavor of wrestling that I loved on the indies that I didn't think had a shelf life on a major league national primetime promotion. But we seem to have caught fire. I think that this is a strange analogy, but the way people related to Steve Austin, the guy that gets to flip off his boss, the guy that gets to beat up his boss and just kind of do what he wants. Like, there is a Generation Y or a millennial equivalent that Orange Cassidy follows. Like, if you can get by on doing the bare minimum, isn't that the dream? You know, like if you can be popular and have a full job and people will buy your t-shirts and your merch and everything because you're just getting by doing the bare minimum, like, that's it. That's what's up. Why run when you can walk? Why exert energy when you can lay on the apron? But yes, I have known him for a very long time. And then even like every possible barrier there is to break, like, oh, he'll be in this battle royal, but he won't be on. He won't get hired. Or he got hired, but he won't be on Dynamite. He'll be on Dynamite, but he'll never wrestle Chris Jericho. He'll never wrestle for the world title in the main event of a pay-per-view. And lo and behold, every one of these checks go down the list. And here we are with no signs of stopping. Yeah. And that's a commitment to his character and the way he believes in it and the way he feels about it and the way he protects it. And, we've converted Tony Khan and Chris Jericho and Cody Rhodes and Kenny Omega and on down the list, all these people that, you know, may have never heard of Orange Cassidy 3 years ago, but now have worked with him and given him the seal of approval. So it is exciting to see what happens next. My favorite thing in the world on the indies and still to this day are, without fail, there is someone who's never seen Orange Cassidy before. And his music plays and he comes down the ramp and you're like, what is this? And by the end of the match, they're applauding or standing up, or they've already gone to buy a t-shirt or whatever it is. And that used to happen on the knees all the time. His music would play and people would just like roll their eyes and not get it. And he has a charming way to convert you. And now instead of converting 10 or 20 people at a time, he's converting 1,000 or 2,000 people at a time. So he's doing Comic Cons and he's, you know, it's ridiculous.
He's amazing. And Aubrey, before we go to your question here, I want to say, and this is not about Orange Cassidy, it's about Bryce Remsburg, the story of how Orange Cassidy became Orange Cassidy, to me, is one of the most amazing indie stories that I've ever heard in my life. But that's another story for another day.
All right.
I love the analogy of Steve Austin flipping off his boss, because I feel like Orange Cassidy flips off the idea of professional wrestling and sort of what it was and has defined what it is today. So, yeah, it's like he took what Steve Austin did and did it better. Like, let's just put over Orange Cassidy on this podcast. So you had said a little bit early on, you were, you know, Chikara day one. A lot of really huge names had come out of Chikara, Orange Cassidy being one of them. But also, you know, we see a lot of like Brody Lee, Claudio Castagnoli, a lot of these other guys. Do you have any favorite moments from Chikara?
Oh, man. We did our first pay-per-view on in November of 2011. This is like when this was a new thing, when you could stream an event and it would happen live. Like, Twitter was kind of new. You could watch wrestling on YouTube, but you couldn't watch it as it was happening on your phone or your laptop. So this was a very exciting thing in 2011. We did an pay-per-view called High Noon, and it was, you know, the biggest live crowd we ever had at the East W Arena in Philadelphia. It was the crowning of our first champion, which went on to be Eddie Kingston. The Young Bucks were in the opener. Marty Jenny walked into the ring. It was just like all the stars aligned, like 10 years of work culminated on this day. And that was really the high water mark of Chikara for me. And not that great stuff didn't happen after or before, but that's like the prototypical moment, that like the moment in time that I was like, wow, like we're part of this really cool thing. My wife, all my friends were there. Like, this is like, we all, much like Tony and Aubrey, when we're, you know, you're sitting at your laptop and working on AEW on a Monday afternoon or a Friday night, or you're getting text over the weekend to do something and you're like, okay. But then you realize you get to Wednesday night and Dynamite's live and you're in the ring or you're at the commentary table and you're like, oh, these are the fruits of our labor. Mm-hmm. We put in all this other stuff on the weekend because we get to do this, and it's worth it. It's always worth it. Everyone in AEW, I feel, would say that, or they wouldn't be a part of AEW. So that's kind of how that felt as a microcosm with Chikara. All the helping with the travel and doing this and the referee stuff and blah, blah, it all kind of worked up to this one thing where we were the talk of the wrestling business for one night only. I hope that answers your question, Aubrey.
It does. But I do want to, before we move on to Tony's question, I want to take the opportunity for you to talk about your friend, Larry Sweeney.
Oh, sure.
Because I believe you guys met at Chikara or like very early on and whatnot. And every year I see these hashtags 12 large, and multiple people had asked, like, please talk about Larry Sweeney so we can keep his legacy moving on and whatnot. So,
Of course. Sweet and Sour Larry Sweeney was born in 1981, but the character he portrayed when he debuted, maybe like 2004, was that of a 1981 Memphis heel. Boas, purple and pink, big gaudy sunglasses, cackling promos. He was basically, I don't know, the Fabulous Ones or the Valiant Brothers. I don't know what the exact pinpoint was, but he was a generation removed in a world of Chikara was a lot of comic book characters, mask characters, luchadors, silliness, and he was the guy without a mask that was just cutting old school promos and saying Jack and Daddy at the end of every sentence. And he was also, you're right, he was also a very intelligent guy. He went and studied. He was a legitimate carny in India. He went over for a year to like work at carnivals. He had a college degree in psychology. Went to Oberlin College in Ohio. Really, really smart guy. And in a world of, you know, guys that you can only talk about wrestling with, I could always talk about something else with Alex. It was Larry Sweeney's real name, which is the name of my oldest son. Is named after Larry Sweeney. Aww. His name is Alexander. Yes. And unfortunately, one of the reasons that I'm such an advocate for mental illness, Alex's mental illness got the best of him. He was unfortunately bipolar and unfortunately killed himself in 2011. And it was just kind of a story of what could have been. And you'll hear every year around the day, either his birthday or the day he died, as the anniversary was 2011, you'll hear people say about, you know, what he'd be doing now. He'd be a millionaire, he'd be a billionaire. He'd be a manager in AEW. You know what I mean? Like, he'd be managing Private Party and Matt Hardy. Who knows what it would be? But it's really fun to think about. And he and Eddie and I were the three of us in our formative years of independent wrestling. We took a lot of years, hours in the car together. We were driving to Florida. We were driving to Minnesota. We were driving to Chicago. We were driving to Iowa. But just those hours and hours and hours, like, those just form bonds and friendships. And specifically five of us, which is Sweeney, Kingston, Chris Hero, and Claudio Castagnoli, who's now Cesaro. Five of us have a unbreakable bond because of all that time spent together. I have a framed picture in my room of the five of us just completely exhausted after a long weekend of, you know, eating park buffets and driving through the night and sleeping on floors of hotels and everything, of the five of us just completely exhausted posing by my car from 2005. And yes, there's a bond between Eddie and Alex and all of us. And it is the least I can do to talk about him and hashtag and make sure he is remembered. But YouTube is a great tool for that. A lot of his stuff was, you know, YouTube was existing in his hot years, which were kind of like 06, 07, 08, 09. So a lot of that stuff lasts. He had a stint with Ring of Honor as a manager. But thank you for asking about him, Aubrey. I appreciate that. Thanks for the questions, everyone.
We're talking to Bryce Rensburg. Before we go to the fan questions, one more question from here. And since I spent many years in baseball, I know you're a baseball guy and you've met many mascots. How many have you met?
Ooh, major league
either
mascots?
Major or minor league mascots.
I've definitely met Screech the Eagle from the Nationals, right. The Oriole Bird, the Philly Fanatic, the Pirate Parrot. We missed, my son and I went to the Cubs a few weeks ago. We missed Clark the Bear, the Cubby Bear. I'd say four or five major league ones, but at least 15 or 20 minor league mascots. That's kind of the pastime. The same part of my brain that likes independent wrestling likes minor league baseball. Because as you can attest, Tony, it's a lot of long bus rides, mm-hmm. You know, hot dogs and hamburgers and catering, and that's it. Drives through the night, Motel 6s, Super 8s, knowing that you're not getting paid what you're worth, but doing it anyway for the love of the game. I have a lot of affinity and respect for minor league baseball because I know those guys are trying to work towards a thing for a lot of them are never going to happen. Right. You know, how many thousands of people play baseball but make it to major league baseball? How many independent wrestlers make it to a major league full-time promotion? Like, it's a very small number, but it's the hope and the dream that keeps them going. So I have a lot of time and energy for minor league baseball. And if you have kids, the tickets are a lot cheaper. So if things go haywire, it starts to rain, you leave, you don't feel obligated because you spent $80 a seat, you have to stay the whole game. Pop in and pop out. There's always a giveaway. There's always, you know, dollar hot dogs or $2 beers or whatever it is. Like, I love it. I love my.
I'm sure you've met Ferris and Fifi at the Iron Pigs, haven't you?
I have. Yes. Do you know why they're named Ferris?
Yes,
and Fifi?
I do.
Aubrey?
Do you know Aubrey? I have no idea. I have no idea. Please enlighten me.
The chemical symbol for iron is Fe. So they are pigs, but their names are based in iron. Fe, Ferris and Fifi.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're husband and wife or whatever they are. Who? What are the Gwinnett Braves mascot, Tony? I don't know.
Don't they have fish of some kind?
I can't. It was a.
Is it offensive?
No. You know what? I can't remember what it was.
I can't remember. It's a fish of some
kind. It may be a fish now, but they were the Braves before.
Like a grouper?
I don't know. It was Chopper. It was the big teddy bear Chopper. That's what it was. Oh, yeah.
You're thinking of the Stripers. I think that's what you're thinking of, Aubrey. They became or were the Stripes. Yeah. Yes. We're all right.
Yeah. And by the way, just a little thing about the Iron Pigs from Allentown. The basis for making steel is pig iron, and that's why they call themselves the Iron Pigs. There you go.
They also used to have a mega touch game at the urinals.
I played that game at the urinals. I sure did.
And you could, you could steer or move the frog across the river with your urine stream.
With your stream.
So I used to chug a bunch of water and I drive the Iron Pigs game, but then you get stuck in traffic. You're like, oh no, I'm not going to make it. I have to pull over at the rest area. But that is sexist, arguably, because women didn't get to play this game. But a great time had by all. And it probably ended up selling more bottles of water and soda and beer because you wanted to play the game. So brilliant.
Yeah, marketing. I've got a picture of it somewhere on my Google Photos.
Great time.
Because I said, here it is.
Yeah. Wait. The picture is everything or just the game?
No, everything. Oh. The urinal and the video screen and everything.
No, like everything.
The joystick?
The joystick's not on there.
Okay, good. Okay,
we're going to...
I'm incredibly jealous right now that I don't have the required hardware to play such a video game. So congrats to you gentlemen on this wonderful...
You're a game developer, Aubrey. Get on it. Let's go. Figure this out.
Like, it's really hard to be precise with my equipment. I'm just going to say
that. Fair enough. That's fair.
Wow. This took a terrible turn. And we'll take another turn because fan questions are next for Bryce Remsburg. AEW Unrestricted continues with Bryce Remsburg, not only one of the best referees in the world, but one of the nicest guys. And Bryce, Darren Report wants to know on Twitter, what's been your favorite match to referee in AEW so far and why?
Oh, Darren, I'm going to go with Moxley and Kingston I Quit match at the Full Gear last November. I had a personal connection. Eddie and I started together in 2002. We were, his first day of training at Chikara, I was there when he walked in the fall of 2002. And I've known Eddie for a long time, and he took a very scenic route to AEW, but he ended up where he was supposed to be. And somehow, some way, 3 months after signing his contract, he's in the main event of a pay-per-view for the World Championship against Jon Moxley. And he asked for me to be in the ring with him, and Moxley was fine with it. Tony was fine with it. Everyone didn't know at the time, but we knew it at the time, and Brody was very sick. And, before the match, Eddie and I kind of had a moment. It was like, I don't know how we got here, but here we are. And we said we dedicated to Alex and Brody, and it was a night I'll never forget. And I was like sort of involved with the run-up to the match a little bit. Eddie had gone to bat to get me promo time on Dynamite, which is a very strange way to do things. And it was just kind of the culmination of like, it's exactly where Eddie was supposed to be. And the fact that Mox was so accommodating and giving and respects and understands Eddie's talent. It was awesome. It was really awesome. I mean, anytime doing a world title match is a great responsibility and honor, but doing it in the main event of a pay-per-view is an even bigger one. That one sticks out to me. Thank you, Darren. Thanks for the question.
We have a question from Tex Lightbomb on Twitter. Any chance of seeing you ref?
If that's his real name.
Okay, we'll get to that.
Lightbomb.
I read ahead. Any chance of seeing you ref a match between the Invisible Man and Invisible Stan on AEW? The original was truly the greatest, as we had mentioned. Do you see that as something that could happen at AEW?
I don't think the Nielsen ratings go that low. I'm worried they won't be able to read it, how that would happen, if anyone have any time for that. I don't foresee that. I kind of see that as a perfect moment in time that happened once, and I wouldn't even want to try to duplicate it or try to make it better. Like, I'm going to leave it as it was, I think. But thank you for asking.
Espen Solheim on Twitter says, would you please give me a better handle? No, he didn't say that. He said, Espen Solheim says, how would you describe the feeling when Chris Statlander boops your nose?
Oh, it is, it's euphoric. Have you been booped, Tony?
Yes, very early.
It just sends something over your whole body that you can't explain. It's like a jolt of electricity. It makes your heart skip a beat. There isn't a real perfect explanation, but it's wonderful. It's everything that's right with the world.
It's,
right, Aubrey?
It's 100%. It's kind of scary initially because you're not sure what you're expecting. And then all of a sudden you're filled with joy and happiness.
Yes. It's like transmitting good vibes from one person to another. It feels great.
We have a question from Anime Otaku 2. Who is the scariest talent you have ever encountered in the ring, and why is it -1?
He's so bossy. A couple of guys kind of get in there in the zone, and it is hard to differentiate the person, the character from the person. Pac being one, when Pac's in the zone and he's coming out, it's like, oh boy, here we go. This guy's not screwing around. I find Malakai Black to be a very... his character kind of consumes him when the red light is on. It's hard to be -1. He is just so mean and bossy.
Yeah. He's a little punk. Orange Coffity wants to know, what story behind the leg trip movement that you do before you go down to make the count?
I don't know. I just kind of happened. It's not intentional. It started and I've been asked how to like duplicate it or replicate. I just don't know. It's just a weird thing I do. Sorry. No story.
Okay.
You had alluded to this a little bit, and someone asked the question, Kyle L. on Twitter, what was it like cutting the promo with Eddie Kingston? It was so authentic, you can't help but feel like it was from the heart, and it must have been so fulfilling getting to become so successful that you get this microphone time.
That's very nice. It did feel great. It did feel from the heart. I did run it by one person, and the last line about saving yourself from yourself, Brody Lee gave me that line. And that was one of the last times Brody was with us, unfortunately. Just weird how everything happens for a reason. Everything kind of comes together, and Eddie and Brody were very close. I still don't understand quite how that happened. I don't really know if it was authorized. And I, you know, Eddie said it was okay, and Moxie was cool with it, and Tony was cool with it, and it happened. And then I was actually... the show wasn't completely live that week, and I got to watch it at home, and it really confused my dog because she was watching me. I was sitting on the couch. She heard my voice on the TV, and I was sitting next to her, and she looked at me, and she looked at the dog. So for that alone, it was all worth it. But yes, I don't foresee it happening ever again. I am glad it was, my nerves are glad it was during the pandemic era of professional wrestling, because that on live TV in a completely full of arena would have been a whole different bag of anxietal worms. But it was cool. It was very cool that got to happen. It was very kind of Tony and Eddie and Mox and whoever else allowed it to feel that confidence in me that I would screw it up.
Yeah, to follow up on that, you mentioned Brody, and you and Brody were very close. You had a very emotional interview that you did during the show where we celebrated his career. You worked closely with Brody for a long time, right?
I did. We came up together in Chikara. He kind of, the character, what he was famously known for a long time, the trucker, the white tank top, the bandana, that was a Chikara character that kind of evolved into WWE. And we grew apart. I also know Amanda. I refereed for Amanda in 2005 at an indie show at a county fair in Rochester. And I grew apart from Brody, but the cool thing about the wrestling thing is when you haven't seen someone, or, you know, I mean, we like text happy birthday and stuff. We haven't seen someone for 6 or 7 years. The day he showed up as the Exalted One, it was like no time had passed.
Sure.
We were joking about old things. You know, I remember being able, as the travel guy, when he was a surprise still, getting to email him and sort his flight to what we thought was going to be to Rochester, but turned out to be to Jacksonville. But just that feeling like, hey man, like, you know, and we're catching up over email, we're catching up over text. And then he was there. And it was like, we took a picture that night. This is before Eddie showed up, but it was Chuck Taylor, Orange Cassidy, Brody and I took a selfie to send to Claudio because we were at Jacksonville. Claudio was at Orlando over there taping TV and just kind of like, hey man, what's up? And he sent one back of him and Drew Gulak, who was kind of our crew back in Chikara. And it was great to have him back in my life. And since we had diverged, you know, and I said this on television, when we diverged, it was more about wrestling. When we came back together in 2020, we were husbands and parents, and I have two sons, he has two sons. And we ended up talking about that a lot, balancing our time. And Brody is a big one. Matt and Nick do this as well. I don't think maybe Tony, when you were breaking in, the idea of being a present father and family man and being a big wrestling, you know, being completely involved in the wrestling business really lived in parallel very often.
Right.
You hear stories about, you know, these guys missing their kids' births. And this is a credit to Tony and AEW and, you know, the present day, but you don't hear a lot of that anymore. Like, Brody was a guy that made it work. He took his family very seriously, took his career very seriously, and he made it work, and he decided where the boundaries were. And if that means driving home after a show in Jacksonville to sleep in his own bed and wake up and take his kid to school, Brody would do that. If that means me, you know, flying in the day of a show sometimes so I can take my kid to school or be there for a birthday or something, like, I'll do that too. We show up for work, it's time to work. When we go home, it's time to be home. And Brody taught me a lot about that, and he taught me a lot of things, but that was something definitely in this last year that he shared with me. And being able to be around -1, -1, -2, -3, which is Rhino and Amanda, and just seeing them and them still being able to be in our lives is, I think, a wonderful, beautiful thing. And it's obviously not what anyone wanted and not what anyone planned for, but I think AEW and the AEW family has made the best possible lemonade out of a giant, awful pile of lemons.
Yep.
Yeah. If that's fair to say.
No, very well said.
I think you had described Brody Lee as one of the faces on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling dads.
Yeah. Yep.
We got a question from Tourney Master on Twitter. What is the most ridiculous thing you've ever done when you were involved in Chikara?
I was blown up by an invisible grenade. I body slammed and gave a tombstone pile driver to an animatronic ice cream cone. I don't know. I ended up winning. Somehow I won an 8-man tag team match once. I beat up everybody on the other team. It's very, very strange. A lot of it's a blur, but it's probably on the internet somewhere to disgrace, confuse my children one day.
My favorite individual one is where you died in the middle of a match and then came back as the underbrace.
Yeah. I dove once. I did a front flip off the top turnbuckle under like a giant pile of dudes once too, which was not pretty. Not pretty at all.
Well, it shouldn't be pretty because it's wrestling.
No, that's
wrestling
true.
Is hard.
That's true. It reminded me why I'm a referee.
The Broken Agent wants to know, at The Broken Agent, will there ever be any more Bryce seminars in the future?
Oh, I don't know. My free time in the pandemic curtailed that. But I would say never. I would love to get back into that. And I feel like I have a new perspective to offer. I was lucky enough to go to the Nightmare Factory in March and speak to those guys and girls kind of with I look at my indie years, which were 17 years, as getting my bachelor's degree. And now AEW is kind of getting my master's degree. I learn something every week from you, Tony, from Jim Ross, from Cody, from Arn Anderson, whoever it is. Like, there are people everywhere to learn from and to figure out, you know, you see what is done, but you don't always see why it's done. And just listening to the way you and Excalibur and Jim throw to each other and the way that flows, like, that's fascinating to me. And the way you guys mark up your formats to how that's all going to be divided. Like, you never think of that when you're watching Dynamite or Rampage or any kind of wrestling. Like, so many minuscule decisions go into that stuff. And so many of them are based on split seconds and the pressure and feeling, Aubrey, I know, you know what I'm talking about, of being responsible for bringing a main event home when you're on live television and it, you know, it's 9:53:55 and you want the match to end at around 9:57:56, but we're going to go off the air at 9:59:59 and there are moving parts and extra people and it's a 6-man tag and you're the only one with an earpiece and you're trying to conduct an orchestra with few words. It is there are all kinds of high pressure situations that I didn't even know existed, but now we, all three of us in one way or another, deal with them on a regular basis. And like with anything, repetition is key. Like, you, the better you get it, the more comfortable you feel about it. And for me, at least, I didn't feel like I got my master's degree sea legs under me until the pandemic started. And maybe it was just having some taped shows and not having audiences or small audiences, the stakes felt lower, but I feel like I really got my confidence and reps down last summer and fall and winter. And now that we're back, live every week, adding a new show in arenas, touring again, like, I feel a sense of confidence I didn't have when we left Salt Lake City in March of 2020. That's just me. But I guess that's another lemonade of lemon situation, but I do feel like repetition is key. All those dark matches we did at 2 a.m, you know, like that wasn't always fun in the moment, but it made us all better at our jobs. Yes.
Yep.
The wrestlers, sure, the commentators, the referees, everyone, the production guys, the camera guys, like you got reps in, and now you feel a little more comfortable at it. Now you feel better equipped to do your job when it's 8:01 on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Or 9:58:52 or whatever Tony says on Wednesday night.
9:58. We're off the air in 90 seconds. We're off the air in 90 seconds. Bring it home. Why are we still
wrestling? We're on live TV. I know we're on live TV.
I know. I know. Stop yelling at me.
You're on camera. But you're on camera right now, so don't really. Okay, yes.
You're on camera, buddy.
We get through it. Every week. There's a great analogy that I've heard that I think applies to AEW. Saturday Night Live does not go on the air every Saturday at 11:30 because the show is ready. It goes on the air because it's Saturday at 11:30. So when it's Wednesday at 8:00 or it's Friday at 10:00, whatever it is, the theme's going to play, the power's going to go off, and here goes nothing. And maybe we're changing stuff on the fly, but guess what? We're going to get it done, and we haven't missed a week yet, you know? So.
Yep.
That's right.
All right. Question
makes
from Ref Aubrey on Twitter. Is Bryce Remsburg your real name? And how did that whole thing start?
This is another thing that my high school friends and I get texts that every time Jim Ross says it, I don't know why he says it. I've asked him. He doesn't know why he says it. But I've shown Tony this, and I'm going to put my thumb over my address here. But it is my real name. Well, I might have.
Bryce Remsburg.
Yeah.
Bryce Martin Remsburg.
My Pennsylvania driver's license. That's my real name. That's my picture. It is my real name. I'd like to sell that once and for all. I don't know why it started, but it seems like it's not going anywhere. People showed up with a sign with it saying it recently. I get it on Twitter every Wednesday. So it is, I'm learned to live with it. It is my real name, but I feel like it will make it harder to imposter me or impost me. So now that it's out there, I've said it's my real name. We talk about it being my real name. It will be tougher to be a Bryce Remsburg impressionist and I'm looking at you, Alan Angels, really. Imposter. I'm talking to you directly. I know you're younger and you got the tattoos and the muscles, but age before beauty, buddy. You know what I'm talking about, right? You know, right, Tony? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'll just let you know, the day that you showed me your driver's license, I went out there that night and said, the referee is Bryce Martin Remsburg.
So my middle name on TV, which led
I said middle name, and when I said that, Excalibur fell out laughing.
Which led to a whole new wave of my dad, my wife. Why did Tony say your middle name? I don't know. I guess at least they're saying our names, right, Aubrey? Right? Like that counts for something.
Well, I mean, they say my fake name on TV. Like literally every other ref we have in the court does their like legal government name, and I'm like, why do we call out Bryce's name as potentially being like fake when it's like I'm the one with the actual fake name?
The day I debuted, we were supposed to come up with a fake name for me, and no one thought of one. So the show started, they just used my real name, didn't know any better, and that's like, I guess, you know, here we are, 19 years later. So yeah, fine with that.
You just get stuck.
Thanks, Bryce.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Aubrey. What a delight.
Yes, it was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
And you weren't the last on our list, as you had said to me last week, like, oh, you must be running out of guests if you want me on here.
I did. I guess you haven't had Alan Angels on yet, have you?
No, we have not.
See? Okay, good. Age before beauty. I'm still in it.
You can follow Bryce Remsburg on Instagram at @TheBryceIsOftenRight and on Twitter at @TheBryceIsRight. That's D-A Bryce is right. And what about our podcast, Aubrey?
You can listen to it every Thursday morning. We've got new episodes on your favorite podcast app. Listen, like, and subscribe. And then if you prefer to watch the YouTube version, those go up live Monday mornings. Just search AEW Unrestricted on YouTube. Speaking of YouTube, we have Dark Elevation on YouTube on Monday. We have Dark on YouTube on Tuesday. And Tony, what do we have on TNT?
AEW Dynamite, 8:00, 7 Central, live on TNT. And that is on Wednesdays. And then Fridays, we now have Bryce Remsburg presents AEW Rampage.
Bryce Martin Remsburg presents.
10:00, 9 Central. And that's on TNT as well. My name is Tony Schiavone.
My name is Aubrey Edwards.
Rhombus represent.
Yeah!
Thanks for listening to Unrestricted, everybody.
Yay!
Come on, throw your hands up, let me see you. Unrestricted, got the house now. We gon' turn it up, bring the house down. Got that big space pumping, make them bounce now. Blow.